Accession number 31683, Reel 3.
So I walked across the road, and he nearly had a fit. He was letting the car, there weren't any cars coming, but that's what he was, that was a German man, you know. And he got apoplectic. He didn't come and do anything to me because all the rest of us had come across the road. And in the meantime, a Frenchman came across the road, and he said, bravo, bravo, to me. He was so pleased. I don't know how they get on now, but I was amused. But, anyway, it's very impressive. If you ever felt of going to a Remigo, very impressive indeed. You don't need to know German, it's so well done, although they give you a translation, but it was brilliant. And I'd always said all my childhood and youth, of course the war stopped it and Hitler stopped it, and then it started again in 1960, so I got, I suppose they still do it. Well, I'm sure they do. Must be a great tourist attraction, if nothing else. It's just a little village. No, I think morale was pretty good, but I'm not in a position to say precisely, because I was only in certain places. You know, I couldn't say for the whole country, but certainly be groomed about the rations a bit, you know. But on the whole, they're prepared to put up with it. Anyway, had any options, so you might as well. We need to starve to death after the war, I can tell you, because some things came off the ration, but you had to queue to get them. And of course, we were both working full time, so there was nothing left on Saturday. We were in slight trouble. And, I tell you, war's a silly. I was wrong when I was in my teens. People were stupid enough to start another one. Surely something better could have been, surely could have gotten rid of Hitler. I was surprised he was never assassinated, you know. There was a plot, and unfortunately, it was discovered, and they hanged the people in, and he went and watched. What a person. Hitler. Yeah, then he sort of threw up something like that in a out of the blue. Although I think the Germans had a very put upon feeling. No wonder. Well, they say they weren't so bad. The army wasn't so bad, and the forces who were in charge of people who were professionals in that, and I understand they were all right. But of course, had to do what Hitler said. He. If you get politicians interfering with the services, you're in bad trouble, I maintain. I think it's like medicine and education, you should keep out of it, because they don't know anything about it. When you get to be an MP, what are you a specialist in? Nothing, probably. But they all then pontificate on about how you should educate people or what doctors should do. They don't know anything about it. Yeah, they get a good job, but they sit there as they're experts on things, but they're not. I think the American system's better, you know. The Senate is not like the House of Lords. It's they're experts in various fields they can call on. I mean, it's not at all like the House of Lords. And that's a sensible thing, I think. Have a Congress which is represents the people. And then if you want specialised knowledge, you go to the Senate for it. And it seems a much better idea. They either are, some of them are, most of them are specialists in something, or they have access to. Now it seems more sensible, I think, don't you? I know we have the Mother of Parliaments and gave democracy to the world, but still, you can always learn, can't you?
What was your reaction to the outcome of the 1945 elections?
Oh, well, I knew it was a given. I knew it would happen. At least I expected it to happen, because, and I'll tell you why, there was a band of people called, Army Education Corps, I think, all very left-wing, and in lecturing the troops all the time. I sat in on a few of them. I don't think they were supposed to, but all the time, giving them a left-wing to land. And I thought it was not quite the thing. I don't know if there's any instruction about it, but that's how it happened. I said, I knew it would be a Labour victory. Well, I mean, all those people coming out of the services and having this sort of propaganda put to them. And I don't know whether it would have made any difference if it had a Conservative government. There was nothing much left to do about anything except build a country up again, and it was still not built up much in the 50s. It was still pretty in a bad way. I mean, physically in a bad way, it needed a lot of labour to get it back to normal, I think. But I'm not a historian. I'm just an opinionated person. Now, what else can we say?
What was your reaction to the end of the war itself? What do you remember of VE Day?
Well, I'll tell you this. I was orderly officer, and I couldn't have kept anybody or given an order to anybody on that day. Not my life depended on it. Nobody had any control over anybody, and the girls all went off to London, and I wouldn't have dreamt of trying to stop them. Anyway, we wouldn't have stopped. It was right out in the country, this camp, so I don't know. I was invited to a party in an American mess, and I went, and I shouldn't have done, but it's a capital offence to leave the place if you're out of the office. But I don't think anyone could have stopped anybody doing anything. And it was a lot of champagne flowing, and this man brought me back, and all we had in our 80th officers' messes were never very well stocked with drink. We had some gin. So I said, well, I can get to a post and then drank gin. And he went home, and I went the rounds. There's nobody there to go the rounds for, at night. But the only thing I think that I could have grumbled about a bit, they often had to have civilian MOs, and they weren't very good. And the one we had was a filthy Irishman. When you were commissioned, you get all these injections and pay for them. You had to do it. I mean, it was a capital offence nearly not to. So I went down to this awful man, and you won't believe this. He fumbled about on his filthy desk till he found the hypodermic. He was lying there amid all this mess and muddle. He had a cracked Spode Italian cup. I know it's Spode Italian because we drank out of Spode Italian at home or ate off it. And he opened one of these and poured it into this crack, shoved it into my arm. Then he got another one and put it in. And then he did, I think, had to have a vaccination as well. And I paid him and went. And I had a very sore arm, I can tell you. Fortunately, no worse. Oh, dear, it caught anything. They weren't very good. It wasn't very good having civilian MOs at all, I'll tell you. They didn't... He would never come out at night. He wouldn't. In fact, he'd only come for the sick parade, and unless he was asked the officer's mess, then he came because he got a drink. And the sergeant's mess, he got a drink. But if it was any of the troops, he wouldn't come. And I had two girls. Well, a sick bay orderly telephoned me. Why am I telling you all this? I don't know. And said, I have two girls here with temperatures of 104. And young adults shouldn't have temperatures of 104. And... you'll have to get the AMO. So I rang him up and he said, there's something wrong with your organisation up there. Why wasn't it told at 8 o'clock this morning? I said, well, you weren't told at 8 o'clock this morning because it hadn't happened. Well, I'm not coming up there now. And he wouldn't come, and he didn't come. And quite ill. The one girl had very badly burnt in the cookhouse and it had got infected. And the other girl, I don't know, anyway, they both finished up in hospital, quite ill. That was the trouble with having civilian MOs. And I wrote to the highest army medical authority in the area, and they wrote back and said, they didn't say it quite, well, we're very well aware of the deficiencies of these MOs you have to use. And more, didn't say it, but more or less said, it'll take someone to die before anything's done. It did. But as for morale, I think it was very good. What I saw of it, but I don't know about all the big cities, because I was only in London and Yorkshire when I went on leave. There were certainly seemed to be no lack of morale there. So, but I could be wrong. I mean, if you lived in Birmingham, say, or Manchester, or London for that matter, you probably... Londoners didn't seem to be... They weren't giving up the ghost by any means. And, so, no. I keep wondering what this is.
What was your experience of the demobilisation process?
Oh, it was very efficient. You got a... Men got a suit. I mean, it actually went like clockwork. You were given a date, and that's when you went. And you knew for ages when it was going to be, so you could make your arrangements. And men got a suit and a hat. And I don't know what we got. I don't think we got any clothes. Oh, we got clothing coupons, I think. Well, I mean, who want women don't want other people to buy the clothes for them, do they? And so I think we got... yes, I think we did. Anyway, my sister had stolen all my clothes when I came back. So I needed to get some clothes from somewhere, because it was about the same size. She stole them all, carried them off. I suppose she thought, well, it's never going to finish her. Or I might get killed or something. Anyway, I had to get some clothes, because I got a job, you see. I had to have a job. I was going to earn my living. And I had to be in London. I had been offered a very good job in London. I don't know why I was offered it, because I didn't know anything. I mean, it was a great job. It really was. I was doing the foreign correspondence for the firm, which didn't take me 5 minutes. And I had the job also of buying all the fiction sent out to India, new fiction. We were in Henrietta Street, the publisher's street, you know, we'd glanced next door, all the men came in and showed me their way and gave me copies to read. I must have been the best read person in fiction in London at that time. It was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a dog and I had to take her to work, which was a pity. I mean, it was a pity for her, it was a bit boring. But she was a very, very, very stable sort of dog. She would sit on the edge of the underground platform as the train pushed in and never had to die. And she'd always been in the country all her life. So anyway, she came. The only embarrassing thing that happened with the dog was the head man of the whole firm, a very big firm, but this was just the London office, was over from India, and his wife was wearing a fur coat. And one thing this dog I found wouldn't have was anybody wearing a fur coat. And the managing director came in and he said, "We even have a dog in the office." And she bent down. This dog leapt straight for her throat. However, she didn't connect, fortunately. Dear old dear. But that's all she was about.
Which firm was this, sorry?
It was, oh, you wouldn't know it. It was called Amalgamations Limited. Very big firm, very big export firm. All the stuff that went to India, for the, and, of course, was sent through it. And I did all kinds of things. I got to be able to do shipping, which is an arcane thing, I can tell you. It's a bit like printing, you know, father to son. And I got to be able to ship anything to anywhere. Except I once distinguished myself by sending a deckload of lorries to sea without insuring it. But I was well in with the insurers and they backdated it. But I didn't know anything about anything, but I learnt it. I learnt it there. It was most interesting. I've never had a job I didn't like. Ever. You can always find something interesting. And I used to go and, when you have to wait 3 weeks for your money, you have to discount a bill. It's called brokering bills. And I used to type out a thing, any old thing really, and take it to two old men under the Bank of China, and they'd hand me a cheque for God knows how much. They don't look as if there's a penny between them. You know, the city's a fascinating place, you know. I don't know what's happening there now. It's not a bit of a problem, isn't it? And what else can I tell you that's interesting? I didn't find war interesting at all. I think the civilians had the worst of it. I realised when I wasn't comparing it with my mother, who never wanted for anything, but civilians were much worse off than the forces, you know, for food and that sort of thing. We were pretty well, we got not sure what to eat. And I thought it was hardly fair, really, because it wasn't just a war in the army. It was a war on civilians as well, wasn't it? Really, an outright war. But I think they didn't see any sign of awful despair or anything. But as I said a long time ago, I'm talking about something that happened 60 years ago. Must be, mustn't it? Or more.
To what extent did you find that service during the war changed women's expectations of life afterwards?
Well, I never asked anybody. But, there's no question, I think, after the war, I don't know about women, weren't going to be shuttled off with anything, you know. And I think by that time, men had accepted the fact that, I don't know, but I have a feeling they had to, that things would never be like they were before. And they haven't been, have they? Well, you wouldn't know, but they haven't. No. Well, when you get a female, who would have thought in my day, just afterward, there'd be a female head of the stock exchange, or head of some great bank? I mean, you wouldn't have dreamt of it, would you? No, it's quite common. I mean, nobody bats an eye, do they? A very good thing, too. I've always been a feminist, before they ever invented the term, I think. I have. You know, anything you can do.
Do you feel, then, that the war was of service in that regard?
In a way, to sort of level out, wasn't it? I think it was. And it's got more so, of course. You see, women had to do things they'd never done before. And so they remained doing things they'd never done before. And it got accepted. I think perhaps men probably resented it a bit at first, but there's no thought now of anything like that, as far as I know. I haven't discovered any anyway. I dare say men have dark thoughts themselves, but haven't told me. Anyway, I don't know how we'd manage without women doing things these days. There seem to be so many things to do, don't there? You know, there's so much, so many marvellous inventions and new ideas. But I can't think of anything. I don't think I've had an interesting life at all. Not at all. Well, I was once abducted by a mad taxi driver in Ireland and carried off. It's nothing to do with the case. How was, you know? I don't know. The Irish are queer. He carried me off in his taxi. I said, "You've gone past the entrance to the camp," which he had. "Oh," he said, "I thought you'd like a nice run in the country." Pulling down. "No," I said, "I have to be back. I'd just been into Belfast to get a travel warrant to go and leave the following day," which he had to do, and from the man at the station, the travel we had a name. And this chap, he started getting the cab behind with me. I went out the other door. I think, I mean, he was absolutely insane. And I said, anyway, I finished off on the ground in the mud, and I slithering about, you know. And he was getting very excited and agitated and carrying on. And I suddenly thought, oh my God, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, pouring with the rain. I started to laugh. I thought he was going to kill me, actually. And he shouldn't laugh. But I couldn't help it. I mean, what a bizarre situation. And he leapt up and got in there. I said, "Don't you go without me." Bathos, not Bathos, you know. And I only just got in, I was miles from anywhere. And I said, "Don't think I'm going to pay if we get back to the shant," and I didn't. But I did report it to a man we had on the camp who was he was a Southern Irishman, but in the British Army. And oh, he said, "Yes, we've had a few complaints." But he said, "It'll be your word against the taxi driver in the court, and I'm afraid you won't get very far." So I didn't bother to complain any further. That's bad, isn't it? Very bad. Well, I think today it wouldn't have happened, probably. Anyway, he was a very ambitious man because you'd no idea what army underwear was like. Really was. I mean, what was the shoot? So, you know.
What was it like?
We had khaki. There were bloomers, khaki, and terrible vests, and and they had khaki stockings, which don't do anything for anybody really, and rather thick. And they provided all your underwear, but I didn't take some of the stuff. I mean, but I wore these knickers. I've never seen anything like them. There used to be a famous song in the army. I think it was the Royal Artillery, and one of the lines was, "She'll be wearing khaki knickers when she comes," you know, and all, and all kind of silly things about the ATS. I said to a friend, I thought that was the Royal Artillery song, you see, and I said he was in the Royal Artillery, but not on a gun sight or anything. Proper, you know, the not anyway, because it was slightly different from ACAC. And he said, "You don't know the Royal Artillery song." I wasn't saying we used to sing it. He said, "You didn't. Not if you were. It was a you. You won't even have heard it." So I gathered it was a bit more. You know, and, I don't know what it was about. But and we thought that was one line in it anyway. Khaki bloomers. Well, I took it on myself, didn't I? I don't know what colour of pants they got in the Navy or the Air Force, but we got that khaki ones. Oh, what else do you want to know? Sorry, I keep digressing. I'm a hopeless digressor.
Was pregnancy much of an issue among the women you
saw? Well, they did get pregnant, yes. And you have done it once or twice. In King's regulations, as they were then, not Queen's, King's, I told you everything. I mean, you only looked things up in there and you knew what to do. And it was para 11, pregnancy. And you got rid of them. I mean, you discharged them from the army, not with any disgrace, and gave them what they were due and packed them off home. And if you had any lesbians on your premises, posted them off in opposite directions. That's all I know about posting people away for certain things. And I did have to, and I did post them away. I felt a bit mean, but you're supposed to do what you're told in the army. I only once said no, and it's not wise at all. That was after I was commissioned as well, but I got away with it. But you're supposed to do what you're told and ask questions afterwards, you know. So they say, well, whatever rank you are, if a superior officer tells you, you do it. I even would have had to salute my own husband because he had field rank. He had to salute officers of field, and I never could remember how many naval rings there were on the arms, you know, or what an RAF berth looked like either. I couldn't. But it's very confusing, the Navy, with all those rings. You don't know what it was at all.
What was it you said no to?
Well, I was sent to set up a small unit of ATS in a place where there were already they needed more ATS. And what were we talking about? But I said no. I remember, yes. I had to take this smaller unit of it, little, to go and join one some distance away. But they had to be billeted, you know. Not, there was no accommodation for them. And I had only one sergeant. I hadn't really an organisation there at the time. And there was a unit, there was a mess, an officer's mess, and they didn't want me there at all because they were up to all kinds of things. I thought, I mean, I'm not a prude at all, but I think if you're in a position of being telling other people what to do, you should behave yourself, at least as far as they're concerned. And they were, they didn't want me there, obviously, and I didn't know why till I discovered that they were carrying on the officer commanding, he was a major, of this unit, was having an affair with the equivalent, well, she wasn't a major, ATS officer. Now, that's all right, everyone having affairs with people all the time in the war, but to let the orderlies bringing round the morning tea see her coming out of his bedroom, now that, I think, is wrong. It's not because I've had them having an affair, but if you're supposed to be telling them what to do and how to behave, I don't. Do you think so? I don't. I think it's quite wrong. And I was incensed. And this all came out of that somehow, and I've forgotten what. What did she say? This someone up from the War Office. Do we? And she. Wait a minute. It was something to do with this. I can't really remember, but you want me to do something to do with this mess anyway, and I wasn't going to do it, and I said no. She said, "Would you do?" She was, you know, and she was horrified, and I said, "Well, I'll tell you why if you want." And it was something to do with that, but it wasn't that. And I got away with it. She agreed with me. Oh, this major went to her and said something about me being there and she took my part. He'd said, told me to do something. Oh, I know what it was. I had enough on with all these girls and only one sergeant, and he said he wanted he put my name on part one orders, which is for the day, saying I had to be orderly officer, I had to do it for the day, and I said I'm not going to, and this took him aback, because it was on, I mean, part one orders is on the wall and that's it. I said it's bad enough having only me and all these girls, never mind you wanting to me or your lot as well, I'm not going to. And we had a War Office inspection, and this War Office woman and all the brass came round, and he told her this. And she turned to me and said, "Is this true?" I said, "Yes." And I still say the same. And so she said, "Perhaps you'd like to tell me about it." And I did. She took my part. I made me even more unpopular. I can tell it. Mind you, I shouldn't have really bought them what he said, but I really thought it was a bit much. That's the only time I said no in the army. Perhaps if it had been man from the War Office, I wouldn't have got away with it. Now tell me what else you want to know.